First of all, I want to make perfectly clear, my area of expertise is not in information technology, mathematics, or statistics. My area of expertise is in public health and managing and using large public health surveillance systems, and that's the perspective that I'm going to speak from. There we go. And basically, I'm going to start with the basics. Why do evaluations to begin with? What do I see as some of the fundamental challenges to evaluating syndromic surveillance systems in 2008? Then a little bit about performance measurements, some process evaluation questions, and summarize with the questions that I see that have yet to be answered in our evaluation efforts, and a summary of the next steps I would recommend. This is just a nice summary adapted from a WHO document, a workbook on process evaluations. And basically we do evaluations because there's a need for accountability when we're using public funds. For accountability, you can also look at calling that performance measurement, and a need to constantly develop and improve programs, processes, or process evaluation, and then to disseminate what we learn, lessons learned, and program improvements to other entities using the system. Now, what do I see as the fundamental challenge? Well, what the biggest problem we have in 2008 is limited resources. You have three purposes for doing evaluations, but when you have restricted funding, the balance shifts towards accountability. And perhaps at the time you most need to be improving processes and increasing efficiency, you probably have the least amount of funds to thoroughly evaluate and improve those systems. Because the system is going to demand that you expand uses and increase efficiency, decrease labor time, decrease cost, and show increased outputs. Across the country, I know in Maryland, we have had what I would call performance measure or accountability for at least a decade. We were using managing for results, things like city stat, state stat, et cetera. We're not talking about the audit function, which is preventing waste, fraud, and theft, but we're talking about an assessment of what is the value added by engaging in this activity and what makes it more deserving of funding than other proposed public endeavors that could be engaged in. And we're looking at things like return on investment. What's the cost benefit, for instance, in surveillance systems? What's the cost in per outbreak detected or per disease detected? What's the efficiency? Are we decreasing labor costs by engaging in this activity? Are we increasing flexibility? Are we increasing effectiveness? Are we seeing better outcomes because we engage in this activity? And those stresses are going to be paramount in 2008 in terms of evaluating public health systems. So what are the challenges in performance measure and what I call data-driven resource allocation? Because that's what we're really seeing. These surveillance systems are being supported in large measure by state and local funds, which are under tremendous stresses right now. Well, we need to develop metrics that resonate with the funders and the public. We can't use metrics that resonate with us or with the systems developers, but it has to be something that says to the public, what are you gaining from this, and why should we continue to spend large amounts of money to do it? Then we need to routinely measure and report those metrics. Now, the list here is not meant to be an all-encompassing list. It was just some of my thoughts about things that you could measure. You could look at measuring the improvement in completeness of outbreak detection or improvements in the timeliness of outbreak detection. Can we see a decrease in the magnitude or a decrease in the duration of outbreaks because we're detecting them and intervening earlier? Is there a decrease in the time interval before effective public health interventions occur during an outbreak? Those are the kinds of outcomes that might have a better hook on them in terms of ensuring that systems continue and improve. talk a little bit about process evaluation, because that's the system improvement aspects of the evaluation. Well, over time, if you look at the CDC guidelines on the evaluation of public health surveillance systems, which were 1988, then updated in 2001, and the framework for evaluating the syndromic systems, which was published in 2004, the evaluation of the system is linked integrally to the purpose of the system. And at the outset, the purpose of the syndromic surveillance systems was very clearly linked to the early detection of large outbreaks that were the result of deliberate actions. And as such, those systems were set up to be very, very sensitive. That was more important. You wanted to minimize the risk of missing the leading edge of the outbreak. And it was acceptable that the predictive value positive was going to be at or near zero, because those events would be very rare. But over time, as we're using the systems and there's been a lack of events, it becomes very, very expensive to continue to have systems that have a predictive value positive of near zero. The other aspect that was very, very important, of course, was the timeliness. You needed to detect outbreaks before traditional systems, and you needed to enable public health intervention early to reduce morbidity and mortality. But we again can't track that because the system, although maybe operating very effectively, has a lack of events to detect. So over time, in the absence of these outbreaks, syndromic surveillance system uses have modified. Public health users saw tremendous power in them to do other things, and so over time they've started to use it for reassurance that we can tell the public in general that nothing's happening. To do that, we have to be very, very sure that a predictive value negative is close to 100%. We can use them for situational awareness to have a broad scan of what's happening in our community. Do we see any indications of small outbreaks or community-based outbreaks that we should be concerned of? We've been using them for environmental scans. For instance, there's a chemical spill, and the governor calls up you as the person in charge of the system and says, I want to know if there's any evidence that people got sick from that chemical spill. So we try to find what are the symptoms of the exposure to that chemical and use a user-defined query to say, is there any evidence that there's chemical-related illness? Is there any evidence of illnesses related to this heat wave, et cetera? They've been used to modify defined populations for injury and illness, for instance, after a large natural disaster such as Hurricane Katrina, or to monitor Katrina evacuees for illnesses in various communities across the country. Looking for carbon monoxide poisoning in some events, et cetera. Been used for monitoring trends and changes in trends in seasonal illness, for instance, seasonal outbreaks of influenza or gastrointestinal disease, and to assist in outbreak investigation and monitoring, to do things like case finding. We have a case definition of the current outbreak. We go back into the data to see if there were missed cases that occurred earlier that we can interview and gather more information about the nature and cause of the outbreak, or to monitor our control efforts and make sure that the cases have ceased to occur. But the question arises, do we really have the data that validates and supports using the system in this way? Have we been evaluating these uses to see if although we're using it this way, has it worked? This diagram, this entirety, is actually taken from the framework for evaluating public health surveillance systems for early detection. And I think it's a very good diagram of the totality of the process. And so I'm just going to walk through some of the places where I think there's been some gaps. The first gap is that we've been concentrating on finding sources of data, but we've not necessarily, as we've added in or removed sources of data, if they become too difficult to maintain or if they're easy to harvest, we tend to put them in. We're not systematically evaluating what the effects on the sensitivity and specificity of the data sources that come in and out are, and we need to do a better job of that. The next status, and we've done a fair job of evaluating the automated statistical analysis component of the system. In a lot of ways, this entire system is very much like a two-stage screening that we've used for years in public health, where you have a very sensitive initial screen, and then you apply a more specific test to assure that you're eliminating the false positives. So we've done a pretty good job on the very sensitive automated detection system, at least for some conditions. There's been a large number of tests looking at influenza-like illnesses or influenza itself, looking at seasonal gastroenteritis. But a paucity of evaluations on the other syndromes and other disease entities of interest, as particularly in terms of terrorism. And one of the difficulties is because the key to determining sensitivity, specificity, predictive value, et cetera, is that item that's circled there. Your ability, and this is an adaptation of a very familiar 2x2 table to reflect the realities of syndromic surveillance, is the determination of when there's an outbreak and when there's not an outbreak. And that's one of the biggest challenges we've got. Thus far in those evaluations, there's been, and you hesitate, your gold is very much in quotations here because there really isn't an absolute in this determination. The two approaches for determining when the outbreaks are either to use real data, that is historical data taken from public health entities about actual outbreaks, or synthetic data, manufactured data regarding outbreaks. And there are advantages and disadvantages, or advantages, and I would use rather the disadvantages, cautions to both. Certainly in terms of real outbreaks, you have a good historical record of the actual timeline, the case definition, a wide range of outbreak sizes, types, epidemiological curves. The cautions are that you have few, if any, outbreaks that affect all population subgroups. You often have missed or unreported outbreaks. Not all diseases of interest are reportable condition or notifiable conditions, and you may have missed cases. And then there is some question about if you don't actually have the venue in which the outbreak occurs in your data stream. For instance, if you're not collecting data that would reflect long-term care facilities and you have a large number of outbreaks in long-term care facilities, should they be in or out of your test? When you're using synthetic data, the advantages are certainly you have certainty about when the outbreak timeline and magnitude is, and it does allow for you to test with regard to outbreaks that rarely occur naturally. But the cautions are you have to estimate the timeline for traditional surveillance, and one of the biggest cautions is you can only model what you know. It's very difficult to model for things that are as complex and unpredictable as reality often is. And sometimes to compensate for that difficulty and lack of ability to mirror the complexity of reality, some people are tempted to do random assignments of incubation periods, et cetera. But then you have the issue of, are you recognizing the interrelationships that occur in various contexts in terms that influence disease transmission patterns? For background data, so that's the period that tells you when there's no outbreaks, again, you can use real or synthetic data. Probably the biggest caution in using real data is you have to really work hard to scour the data to make sure you don't have undetected outbreaks that were never reported in the background data. And synthetic data, certainly you can be very certain that this period has no outbreak because you didn't put an outbreak in it. But it may not mimic the day-to-day variability or atypical, very human ways people report their symptoms, which don't always match. And then there's always the question of how do you model for the detection of clusters of illnesses during seasonal outbreaks. For instance, during seasonal influenza activity, how do you superimpose an outbreak of Legionnaires or another respiratory disease, anthrax of interest? So the question is, do we evaluate the system as it's designed, which is what the current guidelines and frameworks do advocate, or as it's used, which would be my recommendation, that it's very important if we're using the systems this way to know that the uses are valid and evaluated. So that brings us to the evaluation of this segment of the process, which is probably under evaluated at this point, under study. Are we really going back and assuring that at this decision point here that our epidemiologists are making the right call when they call low probability of outbreak? Is that the correct call? So we need to retrospectively evaluate the entire system's sensitivity and specificity, not just the sensitivity and specificity of the automated segment of it. What are some of the challenges to evaluating at what I call a public health ethnic analysis phase? Well, first of all, you have the difficulty of all public health agencies currently are super stressed. You have reduced staffing and increased responsibilities, and it's hard, even for those who are highly motivated, to do an evaluation of this component to find the wherewithal to do it. We need to make use of the data that we do routinely collect. For instance, budgetary data on staffing patterns and costs. Almost all of these epidemiologists that are doing the evaluations are doing daily reports on their alerts and what their interpretation of the alerts were. We need to collate those and judge them against what actually happened over time. We certainly can look at the man hours spent in evaluating and following up on alerts and look at what each system is routinely using alerts for alert investigation other than the traditional syndromic surveillance purposes. And then we could streamline and improve methods for gathering user feedback. Up until this point, we've gathered user feedback by user groups, surveys, et cetera, which are very time consuming and stressful on the public health practitioner. Perhaps we could develop some sort of automated real-time feedback system to gather information about how the system is being used and their judgments about flexibility, ease of use, system reliability, et cetera. So what are the questions yet to be answered? Well, under the performance measurement side, we need to know whether or not the system is alerting detect outbreaks that have not yet been detected or reported by traditional means. We don't expect it to always be detecting outbreaks that are not detectable by traditional means, but we expect it to be more timely than traditional means. But given that, we need to know how we estimate improvements in timeliness, what percentage of actual outbreaks are being detected by the system, what's the cost for detection, and over time, what are the trends in timeliness, size, duration, et cetera, of outbreaks. And on the process side, we need to know whether or not the system performs equally well for each disease or syndrome of interest. We need to know how the automated system is handling user-generated queries, and are the user-generated queries being validated, the results of them being validated in any way. We need to evaluate the results of the epidemiologist analysis and interpretation and link it to actual historical outbreak data. We need to know if the system is missing outbreaks on either side of it. What's the minimum size and duration of an outbreak the system can detect? And is the system able to detect outbreaks during periods of seasonal increases in disease? So just to summarize, go back, and we need to develop metrics and measure them regularly. We need to use the data already being collected to do an analysis. We need to look at the entire system overall for sensitivity, specificity, timeliness, predictive value, positive and negative should be in there too. We need to cost out the system and know what the value of it is. Okay, and to develop methods to easily and quickly gather user feedback. That's it. Huh? Yeah, we got time for a couple questions. Well, that's a really tough question because there's virtually no data on that. And that was one of my unanswered questions is we don't know what value is being added by the systems to say how much of the signal was there before we even started and how much are we gaining through this system. So, you know, it's a very difficult question to ask. And in all fairness, we have to remember that these systems originally weren't designed for that purpose. And we've sort of adapted them because I think that there is a sense among the public health users that they're valuable, but as currently used, to say to the public, well, we looked 365 days last year and nothing happened, it's not going to be enough to continue and sustain these systems. We really need to start adapting them and using them and evaluating them for broader uses. Actually, no, because there are some illnesses that as a public health practitioner, even one case of it gets my adrenaline running. So there are some diseases so intrinsically dangerous to the public health that one case constitutes an outbreak. And then there are other illnesses that are common enough that it would take a fair number of cases before you would really launch a major public health initiative or investigation.
Well, has the guidance been tabulated anywhere that you know of?
Well, I think that I certainly know in Maryland there are some that measles, smallpox. I mean, we have a list of things that are considered so dangerous that they must be reported immediately by telephone, and a single case constitutes an outbreak warranted of investigation. Each state might make their own determination, but in Maryland, we made a determination these conditions are that important. Situational awareness is probably the broadest term because as I was using it, it's sort of what we're all doing in public health on a day-to-day basis, saying what's going on in my community that I need to be concerned about. And most often we're talking about toxic and communicable exposures because those are the ones that have immediate public health impact. So that's kind of working definition I was using, but I don't think we have a common, I think it means something different to folks in preparedness than it may mean to me as a public health official.
So maybe the first step in evaluation is the definition.
Exactly. And there are a number of unanswered questions along those lines.